Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. To be completely honest with you guys, I think this is one of the better podcasts I've done in a very long time. It's just an absolute banger from start to finish on puppies. Like, literally, this guy, gem of a dude, asks all the right questions over and over and over again. It's unbelievable. I think you guys are going to really benefit from it. And I personally think it would be one of those podcasts that you're going to send to a lot of puppy owners who are out there going, what the heck am I doing? And why am I doing this all wrong? So I think that that's really, really, really going to be, it's going to be a helpful podcast for most people. So I'm excited to give this to you guys. And I hope that it's beneficial for the years to come. And as always, if you guys leave us a review, it would mean the world to us to help continue to grow this podcast. And thank you guys so much for listening and the support and the loyalty. I appreciate you guys so much. Enjoy the podcast. Have a wonderful day and happy training.
Hello.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I'm all right. Got a little break. My puppy's down for a nap. Yeah. So that is a blessing.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
So my my buddy from college, we both went to St. Lawrence. He's from Albany. And he worked with you, I think, 9 years ago. and so when I was thinking about getting this dog, he said, there's this guy. You have to, you got to look him up on Instagram and YouTube. He's the best in the world. I was like, all right, Eric, that is hyperbole. Seriously. And so I was looking and he kept on. He's like, listen, I'm telling you. So here I am.
Amazing. Shout out to him.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Good dude. And his dog, he's, you know, the dog since passed, but he has three other ones now. And he follows you religiously, does the same stuff. Cause he was up there in person,
yeah.
Which I'm actually thinking about doing. I know you have like the three day, sessions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how often are those done?
Yeah. We typically do them like once a month. It just depends on the schedule. Like once we get out of, you know, out of the new year and into the, you know, out of the holidays, if you will, then, sure. Then typically once a month we'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so, she is, 12 weeks, and is, you know, going on 13, doesn't have all her shots yet. Should be done by, 16 weeks. And my first dog, I had a dog growing up, but I was really young. And so this is my first dog. And really, I mean, I want to get this absolutely right. You know, cool. I have friends who have dogs and love my friends, but they're not that well behaved. And, I wanted to make sure, I mean, it's, you know, probably 10-year investment here.
Yeah.
And want to make sure that this is, you know, this is certainly done the way it should be done.
Yeah.
So what is to, do you start when you've had puppies, do you start right away when they arrive? Is there a certain age?
Yeah. So there's, just to give context on that, because I think a lot of dog owners and even trainers, like when we say dog training, sometimes we just wrap everything together in one ball. And dog training, I think in most people's eyes, is the basic obedience type of training. So heel, sit, stay, place, down, come. Those are obedience things. Those are learning new behaviors, right? Kind of like your please and thank yous. But training really begins pretty immediately. And training is like, I kind of change training with coach. Like you're a coach, like you're a leader. You are a parent, if you will. I mean, you are the person who is going to say, hey, I'm responsible for you. And likely I'll have a lot to do with how you behave and how our lives are going to go in the future. Sometimes not. Sometimes genetics overpower us and we're like, no, we don't really have a choice. But that's kind of like changing the how we look at, you know, air quotes, training, to me is just, it starts immediately. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a, you know, an 8-week-old puppy right when you get him and start teaching him sit. Although you could, it's just, there's other, you know, there's a lot of other lower hanging fruit that I typically will start on. But to answer your question, training with that context in place, training begins pretty immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What kind? Yeah. And I've done some stuff. The crate training has been unsuccessful so far. She doesn't like it. You know, I've tried different methods and things like that, but she'll thrash at the crate. She'll bite the wire. And I was getting pretty concerned that she wasn't making any progress. So I kind of built this little, I guess, nook, if you will. It's mm-hmm. all enclosed. And it's in my bedroom. And it's got an open top and I just put her in there. It's got blankets and she's out. She sleeps for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, doesn't whine, but I'm worried. I'm implementing behaviors that she's going to expect long-term and that, you know, I have a playpen too, which she's okay in. You know, I can't duplicate that in a car. I can't duplicate that, you know, in a living room. I mean, you could, but that's bizarre. So my question is, are there puppies and dogs that just don't do crates, or is it possible and I just have to fight through it, or if I may be doing something wrong?
Yes, all of the above. There's the answer is yes to every one of those questions. Could you be doing something wrong? Yes. Do some puppies just don't do the crate? Yes. And do you have to fight through it? Yes. So, but just to give me an idea, what breed is she, Brian?
So I'm allergic to dogs. So I got a Bernedoodle.
Okay. Cool.
Super smart. She has picked up a few commands so far. But I'm also worried about separation anxiety. I mean, I think I'm over worried. I'm talking to my friend Eric who used you. He's like, dude, you have to like step out. She's going to whine, but she needs to learn. Mm. And, you know, not to get too personal, but she's part of why I got her is my own stuff from childhood that I'm trying to work through. Sure. And taking care of her and all of that. So my concern is, all right, I had some difficulty when I was that, you know, young age. I don't want to repeat those patterns for her, but I am also, am I going overboard in terms of I can't be around all the time type of thing?
Yeah, it's a tough balance. And, you know, I work with a lot of different people. Some people work at home. Some people don't work at all. Some people work 60 hours, 80 hours a week, you know, so it's tough. So I would just say this about the crate training is obviously, I mean, I have crate training videos. I don't know if you checked that out on my YouTube channel with my own puppy back in the day or this year. And it's one of those things that in the beginning, like putting a leash on a new puppy, they're going to fight it. They're going to jump. They're going to alligator roll. It's just,
she's there.
Yeah. It's foreign. It's like putting a saddle on a Mustang. It's like, what is this? They're going to naturally just fight it because it's not normal to them. So, of course, you put any animal in a confined area, they're gonna be like, I'm in a box, and of course they're gonna. So that's where the crate kind of has a bad taste in some dog owners' minds, because it's immediate natural aversive for the dog. You put them in a little box that they've never been in, like they've never been confined to that area really. And boom, they just freak out. So people are
and
like,
alone.
Yeah, right, away from you. So people are like, oh, it's the crate. I'm like, yeah, technically it is the crate, but at the same time, it's actually just being away from you, like you said, bingo. So that's like the big thing I try to explain to people is, yes, the crate is kind of a product of the whining, right? That's why that's happening. But the reality is, it's like the first time that you've actually been away from your puppy. And so... Yeah. My suggestion, if you can, is to fight through it, because once you get over that hump, then things get a lot easier. It's really downhill after that. It's just, I understand people are like, well, I have neighbors, I have roommates, I have other people, whatever. It's like, it's not realistic. I'm going to get kicked out or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of variables that I talk to people about, but if you can fight through it, you should. Because it's the first, for me in puppyhood, it's like the first kind of like tough love that your dog's going to get, where they're like, you're like, hey, I'm going to go take a shower, or I'm going to go grab coffee, or I'm going to go to work, or I'm whatever. You're going to go be a human and you can't come with me, because you can't go into the shower with me, or B, it's not safe, whatever. So it's, you got to look at it from this tough love space to say, hey, I'm going to put you in here. And typically, you know, you give them a little blanket and maybe something to chew on, and they're going to be like, I want to be with you. And they're going to whine for the first 15, 20, sometimes 30 minutes. You're going to be gone. And then after that, they self-soothe and they wrap themselves up, and then they lay down. Sometimes it goes longer, sometimes it goes less. There's a huge spectrum depending on the dog.
So the context that I'm missing is normal. So, you know, from what I've read, asking questions, and like, dogs are snowflakes, right? Each one is unique to its own personality and breed and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I start to get worried when 10 minutes has gone, 15 minutes has gone, and she's still, sure. So is 15, 20, 30 normal?
It is normal. It's just, they have thresholds. And it's like, you know, it's the same psychology that I'm going through right now with my 3-month-old baby, my human baby, and we're sleep training. So my son,
congrats, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, it's fun, but my son, who is 2 and change now, Banks, he was our first, and we sleep trained him. And all of my friends, my family, other people who have kids are like, when we tell them. He goes to bed at 7:30 and he wakes up at 8:30. That's it. People are like, what? How did you do? And I'm like, it's easy, because in the beginning it's hard, right? But it's an easy format. So my point is this, is in the beginning it is difficult to hear them cry, because you feel bad and you're like, I want to let them out, because it's immediate satisfaction for you to open that crate door, and then boom, the crying goes away and the discomfort goes away, if you will. So yes, the 15 minutes, the half an hour is normal, but once you get over that threshold, like say you do that, typically in my experience, like with the dog that you have, you know, that some people who get like dogs who have been abandoned, like those are different traumatic issues that have a little bit more complexities to them, obviously have a little bit more threshold building to do. But when you get a puppy, it usually is about a week. And then after the week, they begin to go, you know what, it's not so bad in here and I'm okay. But my point is it's the small picture here is you creating your dog to allow your dog a safe place to be while you go be a human, because that's reality. You're not going to be able to sit there and hold your dog's hand literally for their life. That would be torturous for both of you. And the bigger picture here is this is the first experience where the dog is going to be able to deal and handle with stress on their own, which is important, because it's like you need to learn how to deal with this stress. Because if I, because that's the first step where dog owners start to break down their relationship, is the dog has a tiny bit of stress. And it's, listen, I have a ton of empathy and understanding of dog owners like, oh my God, because it's sad to hear. The dog's like, arr, 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 and you're like, they're completely fine. they're just like, I need to get to you. And that's where you just have to, you know, give them like the tough love pill a little bit and say, hey, you're going to have to deal with being away from me for a little bit. Because if I give into this, you're actually doing them a gigantic disservice. Because, sure. you know what I mean? You're really giving into, if you cry and you show that you're uncomfortable or that you just don't want to be in there, and immediately when you start, dogs are super conditioned animals. They're extremely smart. So they know if they do one thing and they get this, so then this whole sequence happens. So actually it's like, they cry for 10 minutes, you let them out because you feel bad. They're like, oh, light bulbs. You know? So it's totally normal. Like I said, like the benefits of, like my Borble, he's a Mastiff. If I didn't have the crate, I'm not even exaggerating. It would be a full-time job to watch him because he's a really immature dog because large breed dogs are, but he's the size is 140 pounds, so he can tear my house apart. He's not just a cute little puppy that's like chewing on your shoes anymore. It's like he'll rip a couch apart. My point is if I didn't have the crate, my relationship with him would be awful because I would be so frustrated. So it's to your dog's benefit for their safety, for your sanity, for them to be crate trained. There's so many different reasons to say, hey, here's your safe place. You're going to go in here. You're going to take a nap. You're going to chew on a bone. You're going to watch the birds out the window. It's not a jail. It's just, that would be like saying, well, sending kids to, you know, to school or put, it's like, it's just a place for them to go and really learn how to be away from you. And
in the stress tolerance. Yeah.
And I think at the beginning, you know, like in my crate training video that I did with Burley, for example, now he's crate trained. He'll go in and he'll turn around and go to bed. But at the beginning, if you look at the video and you remember, it's like the same thing. It's like, I can't be in here. I'm going to freak out. And it's like, I sat down by the crate. As soon as he stopped crying, I would open the door and pay him. But, you know, the hard thing is I'm a professional. It is my job. I quite literally work from home 300
Me
days,
too.
You know? So that's good.
I work from home.
So that's easier because I do get people are like, I got to go to work. That's harder. So anyway, so to answer your question, yes, the duration of the barking, like the moment you kind of rip the Band-Aid off and go, I'm just going to let this cry
let
out.
Go.
Yeah. The easier it is because once you start giving in, then you almost have to start over and the threshold is longer.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. So it's only been like 4 days that I bailed. So I'll go back immediately. She started peeing a little bit in there. And I think that was anxiety more than her having to go because I brought her out. I'm pretty religious about a schedule. And then I would put her in there. But I will feed her in there. I did. I watched your video. We worked, on treats and rewards and things like that.
Nice.
But she still doesn't go in willingly. And so is it okay for me to pick her up and put her in there and close the door?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Totally. It's you know, it's like a kid saying, like, I don't want to go to school. And you just got to grab their hand or pick, hey, we got to go. Yes.
Yeah.
I would just say to counter that, and you probably already have, but, you know, like I said in that video, just do everything you can to, like, feed her in there. If she's having this aversive, I don't want to go in the crate, which is totally normal because she's like, every time so you just kind of reverse the script and just be like, all the good stuff happens in the crate. All the treats, all the food. And even if you step away from, like if you're doing treat training for other things, if you step away from that for a couple of days and go, every single piece of food and value that you're going to get is actually in your crate, you kind of reverse the role of the crate where they actually want to go in there and get paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if she pees in there a little bit, I have all the disinfectants and all of that stuff. But is that normal too?
Yeah. Yes. Well, puppies just piddle and they pee and they get excited. They get stimulated. They can't control. They have a tiny bladder, first of all, and they can't, you know, it's just like a little kid. They can't control it as much. And that will get better as she gets older for sure. And that's, you know, it's hard to say, is it she had to pee a little bit or is it stimulation where she piddles, which is common for dogs that age. But yeah, that's just part of, you know, having puppies. It's like, that's just, they're kind of peeing all over the place all the time.
Yeah. And they're mirrors, right? I mean, I'm learning way more about myself than, you know, in terms of I need to fucking relax. Like, she's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to screw this up. And, you know, the biting and things like that, it can get really frustrating, especially me. I'm new and trying to figure out what's normal, you know, and not to catastrophize everything. And I think that's my, that is my weakness there, mm-hmm. is the fact that, you know, I think I'm screwing something up. Let's find another way, when it sounds like consistency is is what it is.
Yeah, my best piece of advice is to kind of do what you're already doing. Take a step back and go, all right, I'm not going to ruin anything today anyway. Like, even if you wanted to, you couldn't ruin anything with her. It's just, I think just finding, it's such a great point, really, because I think dog owners get so overwhelmed with, especially when you start looking for information, because you get a ton of conflict, like anything, right? I mean, You go online and say, is vitamin D good for you? And it's like, yeah, you know, and then you come
over. You can find what you're looking for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think the best way to navigate this is to really be honest with yourself, because that's how I deal with these things in my life in general, not just with dogs, is I go, what do I, like, when you take a step back and you really think to yourself, like, she's going to be okay. There's like this frontal like anxiety that we get, we're like, oh man, she's like, but then if you really like take a step back and you're like, she's gonna be okay. I think it's just and then also just align, because, you know, picking your person, you know, and I'm always honored for people that say things like your buddy said, and even you signing up for this, because it is a privilege and it's an honor, because there's so many different options out there, and you really just find, like, it's just like anything else, like, you find somebody that makes sense to you. There's so many people out there can give you health advice, nutritional advice, working out, like, you just find somebody that you're like, that makes sense, like, that whole ethos makes sense, the vibe makes sense. And for me, like, I just tried to talk and give information out that is digestible and that makes sense. And so I just tell people, when you get into that anxiety spiral of, I've messed everything up and everything's going to, you can't really mess too much up right now with what you're doing, because you're already doing all the right things. You just need to stick to something and don't quit so early, because I think that that's what happens, is especially when you see me or other people online, like, we are professionals, so I try to leave in as much as I can, you know, even with Burley, my puppy, he whined and whined and whined and whined. But so anyway, so just remember to kind of take a step back and go, it's okay.
Yeah And that's the thing, I mean, you know, there's books written by monks, there's you know, there's what I found I would say the most compelling thing about your videos is you're normal. You seem like a guy that I would know or other people would know. And, you know, there's a relatability there. And I think that is a big part of it. And it's understandable, too. I feel like it's put in a way that, okay, I got that. That's something simple I can do. Whereas books and I've seen so many videos of, they just seem like instruction manuals almost.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem real, right? And that's, you know, that's how I got into it, man, is I loved dogs my whole life. I started a dog walking company when I was 20, gave up on college. Somebody asked me to train their dog. I said no. I finally gave in. And then it was like bing, bang, boom. And that's how I started, is people were like, what you say. Like, I'm a coach to people more than I am a dog, because the dogs are easy. And the most dog trainers in the world are really, typically really good with dogs, but they struggle with relatability. They struggle with breaking things down. They struggle with the delivery of how, because who cares if you're good with dogs as a dog trainer? It's like, you're supposed to be, but if you can't teach somebody. So anyway, so I always tell people, take a step back and go, she's going to be fine. Like, most people crate train their dog, and they all go through what you're going through. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard, you know, get a full cover, get a blanket. I mean, I've seen your crate. It's pretty dope. It looks like a bomb could go off in there. It would be fine. But, in terms of just like regular crates, is, the blanket method, is there any right way to do it?
Yeah, I mean, you just what I like to do, it's a great question. What I like to do is just what I've found the most success with dog training is trialing everything. Like that's
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
honestly, like you're just a like for me anyway, I'm a nerd about it. I just rifle through so many things to see if these things work.
Sure.
And that's how I've diluted or distilled down like really solid, straight to the point, like this is what's going to work for you. It's because I've tried so much. I haven't tried everything because there's always new things, but that's why my training I feel like is so effective for most people, even virtually. If you're not even training with me, there's people who train their dogs just by watching what I do to try what works. So I think just throw a blanket on to say, you can't see me, and some dogs will calm down. Like for an example, yesterday we were filming at the facility and we got a new board and train in, and he's a Corso and he's barking and barking and barking and barking, and we couldn't even hear ourselves talk. So I just went in there and put on Pandora and he laid down and slept. So just like
Yeah, I got
try
a white
different
noise
things.
machine, and it seems to be effective in some ways.
Sure.
But okay, and so I, in terms of must-have, so I yesterday bought one of your leashes. I think it's the 4 foot red one.
Yeah.
The slip leash was they were out, so I got one off of Amazon that was similar. Is there, in terms of using that slip collar, is there, I've read about it, people are against it or for, what is the age?
Yes.
Can I use that right away?
Good question. Yes. So any piece of equipment that you get with a dog is versatile, right? Like you can use it in different ways, right? So right now at her age, I would be starting off with a martingale and my training leash. Pretty much
Okay.
every piece of equipment that I have for sale is something that I've used for years before, but tweaked it and made it better, and I sell it to people, right? It's not like, this big money grab. There isn't a lot of money in that. It's just the gummy leash that you have is a four. I like 4 feet because it doesn't give the dog too much freedom. And I don't like rope because it kills your hands. I just like, so that gummy leash you have is like a nice, it's what it feels like. It feels like a gummy bear. It's really nice. And then you could attach that to a martingale collar. So a martingale collar at this age is like really appropriate and helpful. It has action. So it has a little bit of give. Like if you pull on it, it has a little bit of give, which is nice. And that's like, I call it like a pulse. It has like a pulse to a dog. You can give it a little bit of information. When you have harnesses and flat collars, there's no information really. It's an article to hang on to. There's not really a lot of information. It's quite literally just to hang on to, right? And it allows dogs to pull safer, essentially. It doesn't give them a lot of information. That's why search and rescue dogs, who are meant and trained to pull to find something, are on harnesses for that reason. So the slip leash and or slip collar, like right now, the utility of a slip could be helpful when you're teaching leash pressure, but you're not going to be going out probably right now with the slip leash and training with it, only because your dog has to fundamentally understand, for an example, what heel is and what leash pressure is, so how to turn leash pressure on and off. And I say this because I can almost guarantee you, if you pop the slip leash on her, you're going to go outside and she's just going to pull and try to choke herself out, and it's going to be great for working inside with leash pressure because you're going to be able to put it right behind her ears, and you're going to be able to start doing the introduction to leash pressure, follow the pressure. Basically, when I apply pressure, you go to the direction the pressure is going and it shuts off. Right now, if you went outside, she'd probably get so excited and stimulated that she would pull and basically just, it would cancel it.
So that's where I'm at right now, and I'm glad you brought up the martingale because I have a flat collar, and it's, I get it. It's like, any other type of training. I ran track, and some days you feel great, and then other days you don't. Like 2 days ago, I thought I had it. We went on this long walk and it was great. She was healing. It was amazing. And then the last 2 days have been a disaster. So, but it is a flat collar. So, okay. I'll
Yeah,
definitely grab one of those.
that's puppy. I do it all the time with my dog, even myself. I'm like, there's some days where my dog Burley, he's like, man, he's really finally coming around. And then the next day I'm like, nope. So
why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, yeah. The flat collar, again, like I just tell people it's great for tags. That's what I always put my safety clip on when I'm back in, like, a prong collar up or something. So it's good to have. But when you're training and you're trying to give information, the martingale is what really gives you a pulse. It's
Yeah.
just it's we call it action. It has some action to it.
Yeah.
So it does cinch on the dog a little bit to give them some information. So yeah, I always start off with martingales. And then it really depends on the dog and the handler, and then it kind of is a ladder from there. Like I have a, again, I have a 140-pound, 11-month-old dog who thinks he's 3 months still, and so we have a prong collar on him sometimes. But when my wife, who's 110 pounds, walks him, prong collar because he's way too strong. And even if he doesn't mean to, like she needs that extra support for his safety and obviously for hers. And so there's a ladder there,
Yeah.
depends on the size of the dog and how sensitive they are. Like you could literally haul up and kick my dog in the ribs and he would not even know you did it. Like he's just a brute, man. Not that you
Yeah.
would, I'm just saying, like
Sure, of
you
course.
put a slip leash on him and he'll he's sensitive enough to it, but he's just such a puppy up here that he's like so explosive and it's
Yeah.
kind of dangerous to, anyway.
Yeah, and I was watching videos with him, and one thing that stuck out, one, he's beautiful, and
Thank
watching you walk and seeing the kids on their bikes and
Yeah.
him sitting and just hanging out, and because she's a jumper, probably all puppies are, and 2 weeks in of owning her, in my brain is like she should know better when that's just not how reality works, but. You said something that really stuck out to me. Don't be a Pez dispenser. And so with that, it's really hard not to at the beginning. So I don't know, frequency of when, how often I should be, rewarding her, I guess I should say.
That's a great question. I think it really depends on what you're working on within that training session. So if you're trying, I mean, really anything, like if she does something that you're really proud of, or you know, they finally do the thing, you know, and you're like, whoa, and then you can really pay them. I just find that a lot of trainers and then, you know, of course, dog owners will just really rifle down the treats. And there's a lot of things that I've seen that I'm like, it's just, first of all, it loses value. Second of all, if a dog stops becoming hungry, then you're absolute. And then, you know, of course there's all, you know, diarrhea and getting your dog overweight and all these things. So there's a lot of cons to Pez dispensing constantly. But what I do is we actually just came out with these new treats, and it's not proprietary. It's just something, again, that I used for years and I wanted to make my own, but make them better. So we have these organic grass-fed beef liver treats, and they come in like little cubes. They'll actually be available for purchase starting Friday. But I mean, if you wanted to order yours on Amazon, you certainly could. But I like using beef liver only because typically when they're freeze dried, which mine are, they're cubed up. And so I actually will like put a cube basically between, like, if you look at your thumb, your pointer and your middle finger, I kind of like will hold it and like pinch it like that, like almost like a chopstick. And the dog will actually like work out of your hand. And you crack out some beef liver, a dog just needs to smell it to get excited. If they taste it and they lick it, they're like, yeah. So I like to actually use that beef liver as kind of like a little teaser, and I give it to them. They chew on it a little bit because it's it's freeze dried, so it kind of breaks apart as they nibble on it. And I don't give them the whole thing. So I like to keep the dog frustrated because then they're engaged. Like, give me that. It's kind of like when, you know, when you're little and somebody like, nope, you can't have it. And you keep trying to grab it, you know, and they keep going harder and harder. Like when I get it, I'm really ripping it out of your hand. So I like to kind of agitate dogs a little bit. And then also it creates more drive because they're really working for it. And it's great too, because you can lure. So if you're working on heel or down, so I don't Pez dispense. And then with beef liver, again, you can crack them. Like, you can crack it in half and then give it, like, if you really like something that they did, you crack it in half and give them some. But yeah, I think a lot of people just like Pez dispense. And the other utility to that is simply, I like for the dog to make the decision first and then they get paid. Where I find a lot of people, they get into this, and it's rightfully so, they get into this lazy kind of training where they're packing the dog with food and the dog's like, yep, 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 when like another dog goes by or distraction goes by. And what actually ends up happening, if you just equate it to even human behavior, is they don't actually learn the thing, right? It's like paying a bunch of kids gummy bears to go to school, and they're like, they're so focused on the gummy bears, they didn't learn anything, right? So they didn't actually see the other dog walk by, or the cat or the squirrel or the kid, or even the person, if you have a reactive dog, and digest the information and make a good decision, then get paid. They were just getting Pez dispensed. And I always say, like, don't Pez dispense there's just a slew of reasons there. And I just find that, I think finally on that is, when you don't have food, you're absolutely screwed. Because you're constantly like bang, 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 bang,
yeah,
bang.
Yeah, satiating them and they expect
correct.
It.
Yeah. So anyway, I can go on about that, but yeah, the reason why I say it is because I think it's commonly, because it's so easy to just get a dog's attention with just like bing, bing, bing. And I make him work for it a little bit more, or a lot more rather than the average reward-based trainer, you know, in that scenario.
Okay. Yeah. So in your opinion, which commands do you typically start with first? I mean, what are the kind of the base level, that building blocks that everything else kind of works from?
Good question. So I have a Kickstarter course, which would be helpful for some homework.
Yeah,
it's just a Kickstarter course. I used it with my old assistant's puppy, and as we were working on it, because we were going to call it like the puppy course, but as we were working on it, I realized that it was actually what every single reactive dog that I've worked with is lacking. So I was like, this is more than a puppy course. This is like, so we call it a Kickstarter course. So no matter where you're at in life with your dog, it kind of kicks things off. And it goes over like the basic five things that I introduce and how to do it. And I'll just run through them. But I'm just saying, you know, obviously, you know, consulting.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Where do I find that?
You can get it on just my website. It's tomdaviscourses.com. Super easy.
Great.
And actually, if you use discount code YouTube, you get $100 off. So it's like
awesome.
50% off. So yeah, check that out. But I would say this. So I'm really big about, I sometimes call myself like a lifestyle dog trainer. I don't know. It's just, I want to develop just a dog that you can live a happy life with. Not anything fancy and competitive, anything like that. I don't do those things. So it would be the place command, which is essentially sending your dog away to a targeted location that you desire, which is great because no matter where you're at or what you're doing, let's say your parents are coming over or kids are coming over or you're in an environment where they don't want a dog all over them, whatever, or you're cooking dinner or whatever, you say place, the dog goes to their place and you say stay. So the second one would be stay. So it's place and stay. Unless you're doing implied stuff, which is different. It's pretty much the same thing. But
that's what Eric, my buddy, who you trained, he said he could tell his dog to go wherever he wanted his place, and he would absolutely not move until he said break.
Yeah, that's it.
And I like it, seeing that actually in real life is wild.
Yeah.
That's what I want to shoot for. Yeah.
Yeah. So the place is huge. It just makes like, again, having two dogs and two kids under two or around two, there's a lot going on, you know, and especially with my bigger dog, like he'll knock somebody over really easily, obviously without trying. So being able to just say, go there. And just don't move until I release you because I'm carrying in groceries or the Amazon people or whatever. It's really nice. So the place command, but again, like there's a ton of utility with your lifestyle with the place, but also it's also just like a great way to develop a healthy relationship. So it's a threshold. It's boundary setting. It's you're going to go there and you're going to stay there until I release you. So it's not only, again, has a lot of utility to life because you're carrying in groceries or you're carrying in boxes and you don't want your dog to fly out. I mean, that's like, sure, that's a great thing. But also, it's the ability to give your dog structure and boundaries with a command. So when you're working on this with her in the beginning, it's obviously going to be on leash with food and you're going to use like a bed and you're going to say place. She's going to go there. And she's going to say, I'm done. And you're going to correct her with your leash and say, nope, hold. And then again, like you said, with your buddy that I worked with previously, it would be a break command after that. So it would be, okay, now you can do what you want. So it's kind of like the old, can I be excused from the table? Yes, you may type thing, you know, it's except it has a lot more utility in life.
Yeah.
So
when you're doing this, and I'll find it on your course, what leash and collar are you using? Yeah, or is that where the slip leash is?
The Martingale and the Martingale and your No Bad Dog training leash in the beginning, which is a 4 foot. Then as you advance, you'll start using the long line because you'll want to start sending the dog away. And the long line is just really nice to still have a hold of your dog. If they get off, you can still kind of grab them. And I usually just use like a 20-foot long line. It's probably my next product I'll make because everyone's like, oh, and that's, again, that's how I've made all my do you sell that? I'm like, not yet, you know? So the long line's really nice because you're still attached to the dog. You can still hold them accountable if they get off. But any behavior that you're learning, it doesn't matter if it's heel, place, down, sit, stay, come, the three Ds are what you're going to be focused on, which is distance, distraction, and duration. So obviously, like the distance for the place is how far you can send your dog to a place too, right? So ultimately, if you say go to your place, you want her to go to her place in your house no matter where you're at, ultimately. And you can absolutely obtain that within a 6 month, like by the dog is 6 months easily. And then the duration of how long they stay there, and then of course the distraction of what is going on. And I have videos on that too. But it is included into the course, and that's like the place. So the place is, I always tell people, like, what is my most used command? Place, by far, because I don't really care. Like, I don't care if the dog downs or sits sometimes, because, you know, if I'm just, again, talking about lifestyle with kids and with people in and out of my house, with grandparents and my assistant and the nanny, and it's just like all this stuff going on, you know, carrying the Christmas tree, and there's people outside, so I don't want my dogs to go outside. It's just, I don't need to put you in the crate because this is momentary. I just want you to go to your bed and stay there for a minute because I got stuff to do. So that's really, really nice. And or like if you're eating dinner, if you have guests over, and you just, you know, it's nice because they can, and a lot of times, like with dogs, again, once they're used to the place, it's usually their bed in your house. They go there, they curl up and they sleep, and now perfect. Okay, so then it would be heel, which is teaching the dog to walk nicely next to you at your heels. Obviously, that is the next best thing to commands, is being able to walk your dog and not get dragged. I mean, most people really struggle with that.
Yeah, that's where we're at now, yeah.
Yeah, but again, I think a lot of people, what they do, and you may be a victim of this, is they go out. So again, like there's distance, distraction, and duration. You shouldn't be asking your dog or expecting your dog to go out and heal outside before they've mastered inside. That's where people make the mistake. Okay. So what you'll do is you go, oh, I've never ridden a bike, so yeah, I want to ride a bike real bad, so I'm going to go enter the local triathlon and I'll try to learn how to ride a bike there. It's like, you could,
makes sense.
But you will fail and you will be frustrated and you go, this sucks, I'm never riding a bike again. That's what people do with the heel or any behavior for that matter. So I practice jiu-jitsu myself, and so my, what we call professors or black belts, they always say position before submission. The reason why you can't submit somebody or whatever is because you don't have the right position. You just try to do it and it never works. And it's because you're not taking the proper steps. And so if you're like, I want to be able to heal my dog outside, or for an example, I want to be able to go to a coffee shop, put my dog at a down and a stay for the duration of the coffee shop visit and not have my dog move. Don't try to go into that environment. Like, don't try to go roll live with somebody and try to do something that you don't know how to do yet. You will epically fail. Yeah. And I'm never going to do this move again, or I'll never do this, you know. And it's like, well, that's not really fair to the art of dog training. Like, you have to teach the behavior solidly and then start to incrementally introduce it to reality. Some dogs, like my Dutchie, she's a shepherd. I taught her everything she knows. Within 6 months, she was off leash, level 3 dog. My Borbul, just a completely different dog, right? So the time frame in which you do so is really predicated off of, obviously, you and how much time you spend, and also the dog. Just like with people, like working out, like how much time do you spend and what are your genetics like? You know, are you the rock or are you not? You know, so I think it's just important to know that with the heel or any type of behavior, work on it inside, almost in a clinical environment, before you go out and do it outside. Now, the next question typically happens is like, okay, well, I have to walk my dog. And that would be like the third thing would be the break command. The break is essentially giving the dog the okay or green light to do what they want. They can be in front of you, behind you, beside you. They can really do anything they want within reason. My reason are you can't drag me and you can't like jump on people and stuff. So the break command is essentially the very, very binary difference of heel, 1, 2, 3, break, be a dog. So when I'm heeling I did it last night with my dog Burley. At night, around 8:30, 9 o'clock, I'll walk my dogs one last time. And with Burley, my air quotes puppy, I work on, he doesn't have a leash on. He's remote collar trained and I'm working on his off leash work because nobody's out at that time, which is a perfect time. So when I'm in a heel with him and I give him a break, right now he clearly understands when I say break, he lunges in front of me and goes and sniffs. And I'm like, perfect. So he clearly understands break means release. So the break command you can easily introduce with thresholds at the door, at the crate, and or even with food. So put a piece of food down and hold your dog with the leash, and then they're going to lunge, and you just hold them. Once they settle, you wait like 2 seconds, break, and then they can have it. So that release command basically means see you later. Do what you want.
Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of these things talk with each other. You're going to use the brake for the place. You're going to use the brake for the heel. You're going to use the brake for the crate. You're going to use the brake for a lot of things. But the brake is essentially recess. So a lot of people work on these things that I'm talking about, but they don't have a clear, now you're done. They just have this gray area of you're satisfied, you're happy, and then they just let the dog drift off. And the dog's looking at you like, are we done?
Yeah, like,
you know?
What are we doing?
Yeah. So I just have this very, brick, do what you want. It's nice.
Yeah.
And if when you see it in a trained dog, you'll see it. It's like very binary. The dog is sitting there waiting, brick, boom, they're gone. So okay. The break would be third. So it would be place, heel, break. And then I would say my next one would be probably stay, because I think that works really nice with a lot of things. Even again, last night when I walk my two dogs, my Dutchie, she's probably four houses ahead of me. If I see a car, she's not really in the middle of the road. She's always on the outskirts, like on the side. I'll just tell her to stay. So she's out, she's walking. I see a headlight. I go, stay, boom. And I can see her. She's got lights on and stuff. And she just stays there. She's not in a down. She's not in a sit. She's just standing there waiting for me to release her. Obviously, that's advanced, but it's really good to pair with the place. It's really good to start working on thresholds. So you'll see this with like the sit and the stay at thresholds, doorways, cars, even the crate. So that I would say that would be fourth for me. And then I think after that, outside of like sit is a very like obligation that you would do probably even before all of this stuff, you already have it, would be, yep. I would say recall would be like my last one. That would be like the foundation of, because ultimately, like, what do you want? You want your dog to, I mean, everybody wants their dog to have off-leash freedom. Which would be, and the other thing is I find that a lot of puppy owners, once they unclip their dog from the leash, their dog goes into crazy mode, which is normal. However, if you're not practicing recall and kind of reeling that back in, you start playing this cat and mouse game, where if your dog gets off leash or runs out the door or pops out of the car when you're not expecting it, you have this cat and mouse game. The more freedom you give your dog, like in the very beginning, if you watch the very beginning of Burly on YouTube, I let him off leash mainly because he was a little chipmunk and I could catch him even if he wanted to run. He couldn't get away from me because he's like the size of a little gerbil. So I let my dogs off leash a lot and I gave him a lot of freedom. So even as he started to get older and he started to get more, you know, faster and stronger, I did a lot of long line work. I would just let him on a long line just so he had the freedom. So I kind of like reverse engineer my training. The first couple of weeks, I really give the dog as much freedom because I feel like once we're really helicoptering them and hovering them with the leash and not letting them go anywhere, if and when, because it's going to happen, they do get off leash, it's kind of like a free for all. It's kind of like this, like, all right, I know this is not supposed to happen. It never does happen, and I'm gonna rip. And they just rip. Yeah. So yeah. The recall is really nice to start practicing. Again, inside, get your couple pieces of food. Dog come, they come run into you. Yes, good come, and you pay the dog, and you give a little piece of food, and then you break. See you later. You're done. Dismissed. Yeah. And then you start get the long line. And you start doing it outside and you just randomly do it. And, you know, I always do, like, to answer another frequently asked question in this lineup is like, how long do you train for? I usually do like 10 to 15 minute sessions throughout the day. Nothing too much. You don't want to exhaust the dog. You just want quality. And sometimes even with a puppy, when you're really starting to get something, I'll ask if I see it really nicely once, I'll be done for that one thing. Like if I do like a really nice heel for a long time and the dog crushes it, I'll let him break the rest of the walk. So the recall would be, I think we're on five, would be like, those are the five, because those are the things that are, you're going to use the most often in your life with your dog. And those are the things that are actually going to be helpful with your life with your dog. You want them to come back. You want them to go somewhere. You want them to stay there. You want them to know when they're done working and you want them to know not to pull you down. And those are like really the principles of that. And then within all of that, which is in the Kickstarter course, is the development of your relationship. So that's, in my opinion, the most important thing, is your dog just knows when you go, they go, oh, sorry, my bad. What?
Yep.
You're right. Because those are going to come from your dog getting out of the heel or getting off the bed. Like, there's consequences, there's boundaries, there's accountability. The dog knows that you're going to follow through, and your dog knows that you're not a pushover. And these are things that dogs really like. So they like you being in the driver's seat. It's very momentary if you allow them to be in the driver's seat. It looks like they're having fun, but the reality is that's going to get old real quick. So people are like, I'm going to let my dog do whatever they want because they're cute. Because a lot of people wait. Like, they wait for there to be a problem. Like, they wait 6 months. They go, I'm going to start training my dog. I'm like, your dog could be fully trained by now, but okay. So
yeah.
I would just say, like, in all of that development is the core of what makes you and your dog tick, which is clarity, which is understanding, which is respect, which is boundaries, which is love, which is compassion. And that's really where you find, like, the best trained, most reliable, loving relationships, is the dog knows when they've made a mistake and they know that they need to listen unless there's consequences, right? Not just like, well, there was a squirrel and there was a car and I ended up under the car. I'm sorry, right? It's like, no. So within all of that, I think, you know, in a perfect world, you develop a healthy relationship. And when you're done with all of the basics, you'd be surprised like how well you guys understand each other, because you're developing a relationship. Just like if you were to go to work with somebody and do all these things, you develop a relationship, and that's what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah, and just real quick, I know we have a little bit of time left, but tone of voice. I mean, I've noticed that in your videos. How important is that? And, you know, is there a specific, or is it different, whatever works for your dog?
I think tone of voice is pretty, it's pretty objective across the board. I think it matters to every dog the same way it does to every dog. Yeah, I don't think there's any changes. I think it is important, and I think every dog responds to it pretty much the same. So, like when I'm doing commands, it's very neutral. So it'll be burly heel. If they do well, I'll say good heel. If they do heel, and you kind of change up the more stern. So you kind of have this. I just thought of this in my head, but think about it like red light, yellow light, green light, right? Where it's like your green light, you're doing good. Yay, this is good. Yellow light is more like and then a red light is like, leave it. No, don't, off. So I think like your tone of voice really matters. And then also just like the way that you do your voice inflection matters. I posted a video yesterday about it actually on Instagram where it was like, you know, when you ask a dog to do something, people get in a habit of stay, can you sit? Like that's the best way to tell your dog you have no clue what you're effing doing. Like, it's the best way because they know, like they're so smart and intelligent. Like they know, like when you're talking to humans, like we're talking right now, like I'm not like, do you understand? Like when we talk like that to them, they're like, you're weird. Like this is not a stern, respectful, serious tone here. So I always like I'll ask a dog, burly, sit. If they don't, no, sit, right? Or if they do, I'll say, good, sit, right? So it's kind of like, you're in the middle. I'm going to tell you to do this. If they do it, ding. If they don't, burn. And that's how my voice inflection happens. But again, like don't have those conversations. Can you sit? Those are actually, that's three different commands. Dogs only understand one like cue, or they should. So absolutely voice inflection matters, because I see a lot of dog owners, A, talk too much to their dog and confuse them and dilute everything down. And then B, they ask, they don't tell. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And lastly, the grass eating. Like what? What is that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, a lot of it, you know, it's tough to say. The dogs eat grass for many different reasons, specifically puppies. So some dogs will do it for deficiencies, like dogs who eat rocks and poop and other things actually will do it because of deficiencies. I've seen dogs eat pine cones because of deficiencies. It's probably not the case for you. Excuse me, but also, you know, dogs will, I mean, the biggest thing is like they have an upset stomach. The grass eating thing could also just be like, as a puppy, they're like, oh, this grass is interesting. Yeah. So I think at the end of the day, I would just be, it's usually a phase. Typically, it's a phase where dogs are just like munching on grass. Yeah. My dogs do it every now and then.
I mean, she puts everything in her mouth, like berries.
That's what I mean.
I'll have to pull out mulch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more or less like, ooh, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy. Like it's not, and grass is pretty consistent. Sure. If you're walking on grass, it's everywhere, right? It's not just, you know, walking in a landmine thing. So I would just, you know, use your leash to pop her head up. Nope. But then also, you know, do the best you can to get out of the grass if you can. Like if you're on a road and there's grass and she's constantly like, it's if it's distracting to your training, or if it's just annoying that she's doing it, and you have the opportunity to maybe move over to the off the grass, then that would definitely be helpful. But just use your leash. Don't be afraid to say, hey, no. That's your job. Like you have to very assertively say, no, I don't want you to do this. So use your voice, say leave it, and then leave it is also like a really good command, which I already have on my YouTube as well with Burley, because puppies get into everything. They chew on everything. So leave it is also a primary command that I would introduce.
Yeah. I saw your table leg.
Yeah, exactly. And he just doesn't, you know, he's tough, man. He's a tough dog. I don't honestly know how any civilian owns one of those dogs, because he is a full-time job for me.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I will definitely check out your Kickstarter course. I'm up in around upstate New York all the time.
Cool.
So I will definitely check out your weekend classes. Yeah.
Let us know. It'd be a pleasure to get you in and kind of steer you right and kind of go over all this in person, because, you know, obviously in person it's more digestible for you. But yeah, it's a pleasure, Brian. Have a good day and good luck with everything.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
All right. Sounds good. Bye.
Save big money at Menards, your pet destination. Menards carries pet food, treats, toys, and more. Treat your dog to the delicious taste of bacon with Purina Beggin' Strips. They're made with real bacon that dogs go hog wild for. Beggin' Strips are made without artificial flavors or colors and are available in a variety of savory flavors. Transform treat time with Purina Beggin' Strips. A 40-ounce bag is $14.99 at Menards. Sale price good through December 15th.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.